ओम द्यौ शांतिरंतरिक्षम शांति पृथिवी शांतिराप शांतिरोषधय शांति वनस्पतय शांतिर्विश्वे देवा शांति ब्रह्म शांति सर्वं शांति शांतिरेव शांति साम शांतिरेधि। ओम शांति शांति शांति। Peace is in heaven. May there be peace on earth, in the sky, and for all life everywhere. May the waters, the herbs, and the trees shower peace on us. May all dwellers in all worlds be filled with peace. In the Supreme Reality, there is only peace. Everything everywhere is filled with peace. May we all experience that infinite, universal peace. Let us all sit quietly for a few minutes and meditate upon the Supreme Spirit in whatever way we please. पूर्णमद पूर्णमिदं पूर्णात् पूर्णमुदच्यते पूर्णस्य पूर्णमादाय पूर्णमेवावशिष्यते। ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ द ट्रान्सेन्डेन्ट् ब्राह्मण इस् फुल्, दिस् क्रियेटेड् यूनिवर्स् इस् फुल्, द फुल् अराइज़स् फ्रम् द फुल्। Taking the full from the full alone remains. Om, peace, peace, peace. So, good morning, everyone. The subject of today's lecture is God alone is real. Many of you will recognize this phrase from the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna. It is a most remarkable statement, and one he makes at least 27 times over the course of the Gospel. Generally, it appears with a second assertion that the world is unreal, that all this is impermanent, without substance, and without truth. God alone is real can be said to be the central message of the Gospel. To realize God is real is the goal of human life, as he states many times. But the enormity of this idea, just the idea of the realization of God, is overpowering. The idea that God alone is, that he eternally is, that he is the substance of this reality, and that in that reality alone, understanding it, realizing it, lies peace, wisdom, and love. The world apart from that is impermanent, mean, driven by desires and angers and greed. It is, in the words of Sri Ramakrishna, a pickled hog plum, all skin and pits, no flesh, nothing to feed us. But somehow we eat it out anyway, again and again, and we get indigestion. So you saw the title of this lecture, and you probably knew I was going to be speaking about the Gospel. You recognize the phrase, many of you. But what it means, we may not know. We nod our heads at this Vedantic truth. But it is hard to accept because it is not our experience. We take it on faith. We take it because Sri Ramakrishna said it. We take it because intellectually it makes sense that there must be something that is perfect. There must be something which is divine, and it must be everywhere. But in our hearts, in the way we function in the world, it is not so. The world appears to be real, and the God, not so much. The material world is directly perceivable. It is undeniable. We can interact with it. And it may be a pickled hog plum, and with all skin and bits, but no flesh, but we still crave it somehow. God, we take on faith. Certainly, we have had our own experience in some fashion. Some fleeting moment, some presence of the divine that we are able to think about. something that we can contemplate on. But to accept what Sri Ramakrishna was really saying is a big thing. We have to remember that this is not some philosophical statement he is making. He is not laying out a discourse. This phrase that he used again and again and again was said by a man whose mind was constantly on the boundary between God and the world, constantly on the brink of this samadhi. He walked in a world that was full of God. His interior was full of God. There was nothing but God. He lived it. It was his lived experience. And so we have to listen to this. And so God alone is real. At first, we take as something that speaks to something within us, very small. Every spiritual aspirant has been struck by this impermanence, this sense that things do not add up, that we try to make the best of the world, that we induce some cause that will create some effect, but somehow the books never quite balance. And so there is something that is not quite real about the world. And there is, in that moment, the dream of perfection, the dream of divinity. Every human being stuck in the world, dealing with the world, the hog plum of it, on some level still imagines himself to be eternal, still imagines that in some way he will not die. And this world strikes us in a different way. It strikes us as something which must not be the whole truth. God alone is real speaks to that moment, how our suffering is actually the first step on the path to the real. And it speaks to that highest truth beyond all conception as well. As the constant refrain of Sri Ramakrishna, who dwelled in God realization, it has the power to free. But it will take some time and it will take many steps. This highest truth expressed so simply is also the advice given at every step. We cannot take it in all at once. We have to remember when the young Narendra came to Sri Ramakrishna on his second visit. Sri Ramakrishna gently placed his hand on his chest, over his heart, and Narendra immediately felt the realization of this, the truth of this. He saw the world spiraling away into nothingness. And Narendra, what does he say? "What are you doing to me? Stop." And so Sri Ramakrishna touches him again, removes the realization, and says, "Okay, we will wait for some time." For us, this phrase is spoken again and again to impart one lesson after another: selfless work, discrimination, detachment, truth, bhakti, joy in creation and the presence of God, and finally the impossibility of separation. No world apart from God. The practice of it makes the path straight. It puts good souls on our feet and some clarity in our minds, some love in our heart. With this phrase, he beckons us again and again to put down the hog plum of the world and enter the garden. "You have come to the orchard to eat the mangoes," he tells us. Eat the mangoes. Experience this God realization. He talks to us directly about this potential within us. And so as we progress, as we see more and more of this truth embodied in Sri Ramakrishna in the gospel, we begin to approach it ourselves. So let's look at some of the instances where he spoke about, where he used this phrase, "God alone is real, the world is unreal, or all else is unreal." See how he used it. He talks to, at Surendra's house on June 15, 1884. He says, "The aim of life is the attainment of God. Work is only a preliminary step. It can never be the end. Even unselfish work is only a means. It is the end." And so he tells a story about Shambhu Malik, who said, came to him and said, "Please bless me, sir, that I may spend all my money for good purposes, such as building hospitals and dispensaries, making roads and digging wells. I said to him, it will be very good if you can do these things in a spirit of detachment, but that is very difficult. And so he takes a good impulse, and then he refines it with this phrase. Whatever you may do, you must always remember that the aim of this life of yours is the attainment of God and not the building of hospitals and dispensaries. Suppose God appeared before you and said to you, accept a boon from me. Would you then ask him, O God, build me some hospitals and dispensaries? Or would you pray to him, O God, may I have pure love at your lotus feet? May I have your uninterrupted vision? God first and then the world. Shambhu Malik hoped to be a good person, a charitable person. He wanted to help, good enough for most. For Sri Ramakrishna, living in this state of God realization, he beckoned his devotee higher. And so he says, therefore I say again, that work is only the first step. It can never be the goal of life. Devote yourself to spiritual practice and go forward. Through practice you will advance more and more in the path to God. At last you will come to know that God alone is real and all else is illusory, and the goal of life is the attainment of God. In selfless work, something remarkable happens. When we are not attached to the outcome, when we are not engaged in some benefit for ourselves, the great benefit opens up, the possibility of something much, much greater than this. Selflessness, a spirit of detachment, opens room for the possibility of this divine presence that we crave. The possibility of something that is eternal, that something that does have substance, something that is, without a doubt, real. And we begin to look for it. We begin to try to determine what is real and what is unreal, what is eternal and what is not eternal. This we call viveka, or discernment or discrimination. And the master, again, he describes it very, very clearly, and in a way which we, as Vedantins, will understand very directly. Discrimination is the reasoning by which one knows that God alone is real and all else is unreal. Real means eternal, and unreal means impermanent. Very simple, straightforward thing. You can see him talking to the devotees. There's a question, what on earth does this mean? And he says, real means eternal, unreal means impermanent. He who has acquired discrimination, viveka, knows that God is the only substance and all else is non-existent. With the awakening of this spirit of discrimination, a man wants to know God. So straightforward. Our mind chases after this changing world, the impermanent. The quality of viveka brings it to the eternal. And by awakening this spirit of viveka, our yearning for God becomes strong. That's a key phrase. With the awakening of viveka, a man wants to know God. So the definition is not really something surprising. So it's hardly unique to Sri Ramakrishna. Shankaracharya says something very similar. Brahma satyam jagan mityeti evam rupa vinishchayah soyam nitya nitya vastu viveka samudahritah. Brahman is real and the world is unreal. A firm conviction in this is called discrimination between the eternal and the non-eternal. So what Sri Ramakrishna says is very close. He simply takes the word God and uses it to replace Brahman. We'll talk a bit more about this in a second. And we know he knew this phrase. He says that very clearly. Tottapuri taught it to him. And he says, I learned Vedanta from Nankta. Brahman alone is real and the world is illusory. The magician performs his magic. He produces a mango tree which even bears mangoes. But this is all sleight of hand. Magician alone is real. So God alone is real, clearly echoes, Brahman alone is real, the world is illusory. And he uses this phrase with Brahman in many places, but always to designate the Vedantic ideal, to always talk about the practice of jnana. But when he speaks to the devotees about his own realization and about their own steps in front of them, the word Brahman is replaced with God. Mitya is the word used for unreal in the Sanskrit, and he does use it when he uses Brahman. But he replaces that word with simpler concepts. Mithya is a difficult concept in Sanskrit. It exists in Bengali in the same way. Or in a more colloquial sense, it just means a lie or something like that. And so instead of saying unreal per se, he says that it is impermanent, that it is without substance, that it is not the truth. And so it is simplified in some way. But look at the simple shift that moving from the idea of Brahman alone is real to God alone is real does. When we take a look at the word Brahman alone is real, it refers to a process of negation. It refers to removing everything that is not real, everything that is not eternal. So we say, not this, not this, neti, neti, neti. God alone is real is an affirmation. God alone is real puts this ideal in front of us in a way that shapes how we think of ourselves as well. When there is, with this affirmation, there is this seed of truth which takes root and blossoms in the heart of the devotees. There is no over-intellectualizing here. There's no intellectualizing at all. The goal is to realize God. And so as much as this is discrimination, it is also reminding the devotee of this goal. And everything becomes more practical, more relevant. Brahma Satyam is the process of discernment. Ishvara Satyam, God alone is real, is the process of coming to this living experience of God. When we hear these Vedantic ideals, such as Brahman alone is real, often we have an intellectual reaction to them. Brahman, Atman, is something transcendent, something without end, something eternal, something without change. It is very hard to hold in the mind. But when spoken by a man who was dwelling solely in God realization, it is a different thing entirely. And so to try to understand his vision of Viveka, I'll tell one story here that Sri Ramakrishna tells. Many of you will know this story. It says, in a certain village there was a weaver. And this weaver was a very pious man. And he would go to sell his goods in the market, on the market day. And he would say, when a customer came to him, you know, they would ask the price, and he would say, by the will of Rama, the yarn for the cloth cost 1 rupee. My labor cost 4 annas, and the profit I take for the benefit of my family is 2 annas. And so by the will of Rama, the cost of the cloth is 1 rupee and 6 annas. And so everything was by the will of Rama, the will of Rama this, by the will of Rama that. And so customers would quite happily pay, and they would go, and they would always shop with him because there was no bargaining, there was no deceit. He was loved by all. And then one day, after supper, he is in the worship hall late, and he is up praying and meditating on Rama. And a group of robbers come, and they see him there, and they take him away. They kidnap him, and they say, you will be helping us. And so they go and rob a house, and he's standing there. And they come out with the goods, and they put the stolen goods on his back and say he's to carry them. And as they're walking away, the police come. The robbers all run away, and this man is left holding all these goods. And so the police take him, and they lock him up, and they put him in the holding cell for the night. In the morning, the villagers hear about this, and they say, this is not possible. This man is incapable of such an act. He wouldn't do these things. So they go to the police station and quite angrily remonstrate with the magistrate, saying, this cannot be the case. You have to see what happened. There's some mistake here. And so the magistrate calls the man in. And he says, by the will of Rama, I was in the worship hall. When by the will of Rama the robbers appeared, and by the will of Rama they took me away. By the will of Rama they forced me to help them in their crime, and by the will of Rama I was carrying their goods when the police arrived. By the will of Rama I was arrested and put in the holding cell, and by the will of Rama I've been called to see you this morning to the magistrate. Now, needless to say, The magistrate looked at this and said, okay, obviously there's some problem, and he set him free. And everyone's happily walking home when he says, by the will of Rama, the magistrate has freed me. Now, we don't look at this man and say, this is a case of Viveka. When we think of Viveka, we think of a very clever person. We think of somebody who, a smart cookie, he knows what's going on. This man seems to maybe a little bit simple, a little bit slow. But he knew that God alone was real. He had pieced out this idea. And this gives us a sense of what Viveka looks like for the bhakta. He has discerned the eternal, the real God alone. What has given him this discernment? Love of God. What has given him the strength? The will of Rama. What has protected him? Rama himself. You imagine going through something like this, being kidnapped, being forced to commit a crime, being locked up. What goes through your mind? All of these things God has protected him from. When he leaves, he quite happily says, oh, by the will of Rama, the magistrate has freed me. He sees the facts of his life and he gives it all to Rama. His business, his life, his family were all at risk, but he knows what they are. His mind remains perfectly focused on God. We may say that this is a story about faith, and certainly it is. But in the light of God alone is real, the world is unreal. We understand how Viveka and Shraddha might come together. Viveka is reached through the process of not this, not this. Looking solely upon the eternal, looking solely for the eternal, being satisfied only with the eternal. Shraddha is accepting God and God alone. When we look at what faith is, in its perfection, this idea of something that makes us perfectly earnest, perfectly sincere, dwelling in a sense of the sacred and seating ourselves at the feet of the divine, gazing only upon the divine, wanting nothing but the divine, anything else becomes a distraction. And we look at Viveka, imperfection also, this idea that we can look upon eternity only. They come together. From both of these arises Viveka. Vairagya, dispassion for the world, dispassion for what is unreal. And so he talks about this many times. Sri Ramakrishna says, the truth is that God alone is real and all else unreal. He says this over and over and over again. When you go back to read it later, you'll see this phrase in all kinds of places. Men, universe, house, and children, all these things are like the magic of a magician. The magician strikes his wand and says, come delusion, come confusion. Then he says to the audience, open the lid of the pot and see the birds fly into the sky. But the magician alone is real and his magic is unreal. The unreal exists for a second, and then it vanishes. Thakur doesn't coddle us here. So many times devotees have difficulties, difficult lives, difficult problems. His message is always one of dispassion. Look carefully at the things you hold dear, family, friends, our own bodies and minds, and see them as impermanent and unreal. They pass away like a dream. We have seen our hopes crushed, our lives plans destroyed in a moment. It is a very unfortunate truth, but we often see that the world is unreal before we realize that God is real. And so Vairagya, without this higher ideal, can leave us a little barren. What we see is what the jnanis may call a framework of illusion, the idea that the world is empty, the world is without God. But God alone is real, the phrase, brings us forward. It reminds us of this one truth at the center of the world, this one truth through which all exists. And so he doesn't finish by simply saying that everything is unreal, everything is impermanent, do not get attached to it. He continues with the same story. God alone is real and all else unreal. Water alone is real. Its bubbles appear and disappear. They disappear into the very water into which they rise. God is like an ocean, and living beings are its bubbles. They are born there, and they die there. Children are like a few small bubbles around a big one. God alone is real. Make an effort to cultivate love for him, and find out the means to realize him. What will you gain by grieving? There is this particular despair in the world, this sense of that comes from time to time, that everything is somehow unreal yet also inescapable. There is something heartless but unavoidable. And our lives may be like bubbles, fragile, impermanent, without substance. But God is the ocean, and we rise up through her and in her. Our egos are so many bubbles, they separate us from God. But the truth behind them, all around them, is that God alone is real. Every moment, every challenge, all these difficult times which bring us to Vairagya, every time we come face to face with the emptiness of the world, we have laid out before us an opportunity for spiritual growth. God alone is real, draws us to that. We may not feel it yet, but we can cover everything in the Lord as a practice. Some peace comes. Our lives are no longer so many hog plums. God is not so far away, not so unreal. With a bit of viveka, with a bit of vairagya, with a bit of selflessness, we can begin to understand how at least to take refuge in God. But we don't stop there, not for Sri Ramakrishna. He says we can meditate with true faith upon this idea. First realize God, he says. Then think of the creation and other things. He goes on. Valmiki was given the name of Rama to repeat as his mantra, but was first told to repeat it as Mara. Ma means God. Ra means the world. First God and then the world. If you know one, you know all. If you put 50 zeros after a one, you have a large sum, but erase the one and nothing remains. It is the one that makes the many. First one, then many. First God, then his creation in the world. In this, the true light of Vairagya starts to shine. We live in this world to serve. As the master often said, we should live in our own homes as maids. The love we feel for our families is not our own. God has given it to us to protect his creation, he says. And in honoring our own dharma, in a spirit of detachment, we keep the one before the zeros. We are saved from this emptiness. We feel that the constant presence of God as we cultivate this selflessness, this devotion, this wisdom. And Vairagya becomes something more than a negative feeling. It is a supreme feeling. Swamiji talks about this, Swami Vivekananda. He says, this mighty infinite love of God, which enters his heart, leaves no place for any other love to live there. How can it be otherwise? Bhakti fills his heart with the divine waters of the ocean of love, which is God himself, and there is no place there for little loves. That is to say, the bhakta's renunciation is that vairagya, or non-attachment, for all things that are not God, which results from anuraga, or great attachment to God. When we reach this state, there is nothing else that we wish. Any kind of separation brings us to grief. He tells the story of Yashoda being separated from Krishna. She was mad with grief, and so she went to Radhika, who was meditating. Radhika said to her in an ecstatic state, I am the ultimate Prakriti, the primal power. Ask a boon of me. Yashoda said to her, what shall I ask of you? Please bless me that with all my body, my mind, and speech, I may think of God and serve him. That with my ears, I may hear the singing of God's names and glories. That with my hands, I may serve Hari and his devotees. That with my eye, I may behold his form and his devotees. Both the form and the devotees. It is not so different from what Sri Ramakrishna wanted for Shambhu Malik when he wanted to build some hospitals. As our viveka, sweetened with love, merges into shraddha, into faith, so our vairagya merges into love and yearning for God alone. In the end, this realization is nothing other than love with God, love for God, and union with God. God is unlike anything else in one important way. The more we know of God, the more we love. And the more we love God, the more we know. So who said all these things? What is the nature of Sri Ramakrishna? We can't really understand that. There is a mystery there, a holy thing. And the yearning for it is what we have. We cannot describe Sri Ramakrishna. We cannot really explain Sri Ramakrishna. We can't build a philosophy out of Sri Ramakrishna. We can only listen. We can only look. We can only try to follow what he says. But there is certain things that we can gain from what he says about himself. And so he talks about this separating the unreal from the real, looking upon God and looking upon the world and separating out the two. So he describes his state as a Paramahamsa. What is the definition of a Paramahamsa that he gives here? A Paramahamsa is always conscious that God alone is real and all else is illusory. This defines the Paramahamsa. The swan, only the swan, has the power to separate milk from a mixture of milk and water. The swan's tongue secretes an acid that separates the milk from the mixture. This is something I don't know if there's something real to this or not, but it's the folk tale. So the swan is able to separate the milk from the water if you have a mixture of the two. The Paramahamsa also possesses such a juice. It is his ecstatic love for God that separates the real from the mixture of the real and the unreal. Through it, one becomes aware of him and sees him. Thakur could see God as real as you and me. We can hardly comprehend the mystery of this. And it's best not to analyze it, but we can contemplate things he said. So I'll talk a little bit, just reading from the entry for Sunday, March 2, 1884. Thakur says, all doubts disappear when one sees God. It is one thing to hear of God, but quite a different thing to see him. A man cannot have 100% conviction through mere hearing. But if he beholds God face to face, then he is wholly convinced. Formal worship drops away after the vision of God. It was thus that my worship in the temple came to an end. I used to worship the deity in the Kali temple. It was suddenly revealed to me that everything is pure spirit. The utensils of worship, the altar, the doorframe, all pure spirit. Men, animal, and other living beings, all pure spirit. Then like a madman, I began to shower flowers in all directions. Whatever I saw, I worshipped. One day, while worshipping Shiva, I was about to offer a bell leaf on the head of the image when it was revealed to me that this Virat, this universe, itself is Shiva. And after my worship of Shiva through the image came, and after that, my worship of Shiva through the image came to an end. Another day I had been plucking flowers when it was revealed to me that the flowering plants were so many bouquets. At this point, Trailokya butts in and says, ah, how beautiful is God's creation. Master says, oh no, it is not like that. It was revealed to me in a flash. It was shown to me that each plant was a bouquet adorning the universal form of God. That was the end of my plucking flowers. And he goes on, I look on man in just the same way. When I see a man, I see that it is God himself who walks on earth, as it were, rocking to and fro like a pillow floating on the waves. The pillow moves with the waves. It bobs up and down. It is God himself who walks on the earth. It is this eternal truth, and it is also as fragile and impermanent as a pillow floating on the waves. He goes on, the body has indeed only a momentary existence. God alone is real. Now the body exists and now it does not. Years ago, when I had been suffering terribly from indigestion, Hrdaya said to me, "Do ask the mother to cure you." I felt ashamed to speak to her about my illness. I said to her, "Mother, I saw a skeleton in the Asiatic Society Museum. It was pieced together with wires into a human form. Oh, mother, please keep my body together a little like that so that I may sing thy name and glories." Here is this incarnation praying to God to keep his human form together so that he may love God. For this man, all is God. Nothing is apart from God. The Bhagavan is God. The Bhakta is God. All is God. And God alone is real. He talked about this move from negation to affirmation. He said, God alone is the master. Again, he is the servant. He is the one both praying to God to hold together the body, like a skeleton he saw with wires holding it together. God alone is the master, and again he is the servant. This attitude indicates perfect knowledge. At first, one discriminates, not this, not this, and feels that God alone is real and all else is illusory. Afterwards, the same person finds that it is God himself who has become all this, the universe, Maya, and the living beings. First negation, and then affirmation. This is the view held by the Puranas. A bilva fruit, for instance, includes flesh, seeds, and shell. You get the flesh by discarding the shell and seeds. But if you want to know the weight of the fruit, you cannot find it if you discard the shell and seeds. Just so, one should attain Satchidananda by negating the universe and its living beings. But after the attainment of Satchidananda, one finds that Satchidananda itself has become the universe and the living beings. It is of one substance that the flesh and the shell and seeds are made, just like butter and buttermilk. We have satisfied ourselves with this hog plum of the world, a bit of skin and pit that leaves us with indigestion. We chase after happiness where it cannot last. Our own minds, our own sufferings and distractions tell us clearly that this world does not stand on its own. We see the impermanence in the world because there is something in the eternal, something eternal in the heart of us. God alone is real, calls us back to that eternity, that world consisting of nothing but God. Every step an opportunity for spiritual advancement, step by joyous step back to this reality. Sri Ramakrishna tells us God alone is real. Perform your actions with a spirit of detachment. God alone is real. Develop your mind to see the eternal clearly. God alone is real. Put aside childish things. Put your faith in the eternal alone. God alone is real. Meditate upon that real. God alone is real. Yearn for mother. Yearn for God alone. Do not accept the hog plum. Seat yourself at the foot of truth with sincerity, with earnestness, and a sense of the sacred. The world viewed apart from God is illusory. God alone is real. One more time, in the words of Thakur, the one thing you need is to realize God. Why do you bother so much about the world, creation, science, and all that? Your business is to eat mangoes. What need have you to know how many hundreds of trees there are in the orchard, how many thousands of branches, and how many millions of leaves? You have come to the garden to eat mangoes. Go and eat them. Man is born in this world to realize God. It is not good to forget that and divert the mind to other things. You have come to eat the mangoes. Eat the mangoes and be happy.
Om Dyao Shantir Antariksham Shantihi Prithivi Shantir Apa Shantir Oshadaya Shantihi Vanaspataya Shantir Vishvedeva Shantihi Brahma Shanti Sarvam Shanti Shantireva Shantihi Sama Shantiredi Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi.
Peace is in heaven. May there be peace on earth, in the sky, and for all life everywhere. May the waters, the herbs, and the trees shower peace on us. May all dwellers in all worlds be filled with peace. In the Supreme Reality, there is only peace. Everything everywhere is filled with peace. May we also experience that infinite, universal peace. Om, peace, peace, peace.